Okay, guys, Scott here, doing something just a little bit different, a little kooky, a little crazy. I am going to be recording a, well, basically it is a presentation and a paper I gave for a third year existentialism in film course a few years back, and I'm kind of turning in and I'm turning it into an audio commentary for the movie The Matrix. So this really isn't going to work without you also watching The Matrix along with me. It's kind of a philosophy riff. I mean, I think at the time I called it a hermeneutic introduction to the ideas in this movie, but that's a tad pretentious, but it flies in. It flies for, a university class. So I guess you're going to want to pick up a copy of the DVD. NTSC of The Matrix. The particular one I'm using is the one from the Best of Warner Brothers Blu-ray DVD digital combo pack. Sorry to the Europeans, you have a slightly weird frame rate thing. And that's just that. And I'm aware that The Matrix does come with a critic and philosopher commentary track, but you signed up to this feed because theoretically, you like listening to me talk, so that's a thing. You probably don't need to hear them then. You want to hear me do this, because I'm cool, I think. So yeah, get the movie, get your popcorn, get a beverage, and there'll be a test afterwards, so take notes. There's no test, don't worry. This is just gonna be me, repeating a few points over and over again in new and interesting ways. As the film progresses, we'll see if I come up with anything funny off the cuff. I'm also doing this in one take, so wish me luck. I'm gonna be hitting the play button in 3, 2, now. So we have a studio logo. It's green. They've got the flickery stuff going on it because, flickeriness and computers. There's a weird affection for CRTs in this movie, just as they were, going away forever. And hey, code. This will mean something in a few minutes, but right now it's just gibberish. See, now, again, the 555 thing, it just takes me out of the move me. It's a level of artifice you don't need. I mean, you can actually register a real phone number for a real thing. Like, I think all the phone numbers in Scrubs were real phone numbers. If you called them, you just got promotions for Scrubs. These poor schlubs. If you're a cop in the opening 3 minutes of a movie, you're dead. Dead or meaningless. See, even Hugo Weaving, he knows that these guys are dead. My question about Hugo Weaving is, you know, we've seen him, you know, not age since this movie. But do we have any images of him looking any younger than this? Because I'm pretty sure he's immortal. There's just shooting going on. This isn't interesting. Cold open. Nothing to talk about. Just like, hey, we're being all mysterious to keep you engaged. But that doesn't give me anything to do. I swear to God, I'll have something interesting to say at around the 10-minute mark. I'm sorry. See, okay, so you'll notice that everything inside the Matrix is tinted green, which does give it a nice punch compared to the real world. And even compared to most action movies, which tend to blow out teal and orange. And it doesn't work in this scene, because this is a soundstage or a lot somewhere, and that skyline is just a mat, it's a plate, it's a bunch of photos that are lit perfectly normally, so the illusion doesn't hold. This is what I think about when I watch movies, is about lighting and color correction. Man, remember when, like, wire work was kind of novel in American movies? At least the Crouching Tiger style. There we go. We know someone's name at least now. Don't know what's going on, but there we go. So in The Matrix, the first one at least, it's analog is the thing you trust. Like, again, they use landline phones for all their transfers in and out. You'll see a lot of CRT monitors whenever something is true. And it's the cell phones that always betray you. I'll keep pointing this out, but this is the first real clue towards it. And opening credits? No, not up. I don't think this has opening credits. That's different. Yeah, I'm actually surprised they didn't make a point of having Neo be a vinyl aficionado, just to carry on that analog theme. Like, here again, like two CRT monitors, and what's he looking for? Morpheus, and who finds him? Morpheus, like, analog technology is the connection here. It's just this strange thing. You know, since this movie came out, it's become kind of shorthand for people trying to be somewhat wordy by using Alice in Wonderland. This might not be the best trend. I own that book. It's not big enough to hide anything in. This must be a large print, annotated edition. What's this? Foreshadowing? Personal Jesus? No. Oh, and he doesn't exist. That doesn't foreshadow anything either. And the first Cartesian thought of the film. I really think Descartes deserves an associate producer credit for the amount he's contributed to the talking on this. And the Through the Looking Glass thing doesn't even carry past, like, the first act. And I'm not saying, you know, there needed to be a white queen or anything, but, you know, if you're gonna do it all out. I think I worked at this place once. Just helping a friend out. You know, cleaning up after something like this. Money was terrible. And I'm assuming that's more like Maiden, Mother, Crone Trinity, not the Holy Trinity. See, this mistaken gender thing was supposed to be a bigger part of the movie. They probably could have kept it somewhere. I'm a little disappointed. And so here we start, really, the hero's journey. And people call this cyberpunk, but I'm a purist and must maintain that it has to be an existential protagonist. And this is your straight-up stock hero, Luke Skywalker guy. And I'm gonna call this the call to action. There's another call. There's a few calls to action here. But here's the very much the first one that he still refuses. See, digital technology, it lies to you. And this is another thing, is you'll see a lot of scene transitions within The Matrix start out through a window or through a camera. See, that this is them just literally spelling out that the hero is unsatisfied in his home environment. And this is the first choice he gets offered. There's two more coming. And there's an interesting theme of choice throughout this whole thing, but this is the first of three real ones. See, Thomas Anderson, that's an interesting choice for a protagonist name. I mean, considering how transparently, Christ-like Neo becomes over the course of this movie and those sequels that never happened, you'd think they would have just gone straight up with JC initials, but Thomas Anderson, like, that's more possibly a Thomas Aquinas reference, maybe not. Man, remember then when a phone like that was actually cool? The call to action, literally, on a phone. That's different. Maybe a too little too literal. He says that word a lot. I guess that's the one you can get away with and still have a PG-13. Metal Gear Solid style. Get a box, you'll be safer. How often does this, you should just do this in your office, in your own life. See, again, another choice. And this is, of course, also a trust issue. Again, we spend a lot of time building trust between Neo and Morpheus in this movie, but you cannot trust a message on a through a digital medium. So, of course, he does not go through the scaffold. And of course, this is mirrored with a different leap of faith later in the movie. Much bigger, much longer, more visually impressive, but they're actually doing a good job of pairing things up here. These Wachowskis, they got their chops. Those phones get dropped a lot. I wonder how Nokia felt about their endorsement money being used this way. Again, transition with projection. In this case, a mirror rather than through something, but. And again, here we go. Another scene transition with this time a camera. With the. I suppose we might have seen a room like that in any sequels that might have come out, but they didn't. Those didn't happen. So, too bad. We're left to wonder. No, seriously. Has he ever looked younger than that? I want to know. a lot of dichotomies, a lot of binary situations. That of course makes a lot of sense for a movie about computers. I mean, ones and zeros. And you're either the one or you're nothing. Don't we all live another life in computers now? And again, yet another choice presented to Mr. Anderson. Morpheus is, of course, the Lord of Dreams. That's not symbolic of anything either, at all. Nice shot there that you can cut around for the TV edit, like you do. You know, does anyone actually take the phone call? Does anyone in movies actually ever get to use their phone call? That seems a dramatically convenient phone call. Harlan Ellison wrote a story called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. It, you know, that's definitely up there for summarizing up one horrifying thought in a single sentence. I mentioned it here, but it's also relevant later. That's not very convincing makeup, is it? Yeah. Man, you thought waterboarding was bad? Try getting brine shrimped. There's an overall sort of invertebrate sea life flavor to the machines in this movie. Because let's face it, no one can empathize with invertebrate sea life. We just know it's tasty and garlic butter. Hey, another scene transition with someone with Neo waking up. They do that a few times. It's almost like they're playing with what is reality as a theme, and the liminality between the dream world and ours. So Chuang Tzu, in one of his parables, had this saying that, you know, I once had a dream of being a butterfly, so vivid that when I woke up, I was not sure if I was a butterfly who was dreaming of being Chuang Tzu, or, Chuang Tzu dreaming of being a butterfly. That's about as Eastern as this movie gets. I mean, a lot of people claim that it has Zen and Buddhist roots, but no, it's fundamentally Enlightenment-era dualism. And see, he says yes this time, because landline. And hey, threshold, tunnel, that's not symbolic. There's a lot of rainwater in this movie, a lot of rain falling down. I'm not sure what that's exactly symbolic of, but hey, it looks neat. Maybe that's all it is. Is lightning ever not dramatically timed in movies? Does lightning just not happen normally? You get another binary choice. And this is another one he doesn't entirely make on his own. See, he doesn't make that choice. She does. Yeah, sure. The cute brunette from the club tells you to lift off your shirt. Yeah, you'll do it. You know, it's convenient when your alien zapper Ghostbusters thing comes with a, you know, car outlet. You know, they stopped making cigarette lighters for cars, but still kept making those because people use them for everything. At some point, auto manufacturers will clue in and just start doing regular outlets instead. Probably cost the same. No. You should know that, Jesus Christ. This is just playing with lines. It's fun, but there we go. But don't worry, he'll tell it all to you very slowly. Lord of Dreams. Yes, but only for a few minutes more, and then we'll drop this line of thought. And there you go. It's very interesting that you'd reject a computer world based on the idea of not controlling your life, but accept a lot of notions of destiny and reincarnation. It's this interesting double reassurance pattern. And we are at the half-hour mark, and we finally get an answer for something. Get used to lots of answers for a while. So, Plato had this story. He thought there was a world of absolute ideals, the purest forms of everything. That there was a world where all trees were the perfect, most essential tree of all treedom. And the world we lived in was the shadows on the back wall of a cave that we were just watching. And that one day someone would figure out how to turn around and see the world as it was. And that everyone else would think he's crazy for saying that there was a more real world than the one that was the shadows on the wall. Because the shadows on the wall are so damn convincing. This comes up a lot in The Matrix. And hey, another binary choice. And here Neo, he chooses, but again, he's being nudged very strongly by Morpheus. And there you go. The moment that launched a thousand douchebaggy atheist societies. Everyone else has red pill groups full of jerks, right? Everyone else knows those. Sorry about that. Bit of a cold. See, analog technology everywhere. Tickety-tech-tech-tech. See? Everyone's quick for the Alice in Wonderland. He's the only one that goes to Wizard of Oz. Almost no one does Peter Pan, which also has a prepubescent girl going to a fantasy world. I guess because Peter Pan's the protagonist of that, not so much Wendy. And just to really hammer this home, we have an actual looking glass. Oh, and he split into multiple things and then becomes one. And one last transition involving a representation or a projection. Yes, I just told you, the Chuang Tzu story, come on. You know, that this whole bit is honestly, did they just call Geiger up on the phone and ask him what he thought birth would look like? Because that's basically what this is. I mean, come on. Like, he's naked and covered in goo. First breath. It's shocking. There's a lot more tubes than regular birth, but as you'll see, someone's even going to come up and pull a cord out of him. Yeah, see? Very Geiger. Very Geiger-y. He probably could have launched a lawsuit over this shot. Actually, this holds up really well. I'm surprised. Like, normally that sort of CG matte work would be kind of dated. Oh, there we go. That robot looks a little rough. More reflections. And you, there we go, cutting the cables. That's gonna be an interesting day on set. It's like, hey, flail your arms around in this pool. Act like you've just been born. The claw. It chooses us. You can tell because there's no green filter on everything. And some more hero's journey stuff is obviously this whole prophecy notion about the one. And hey, just for some more Cartesian stuff, is that obviously where there is a training montage that happens, it's not about getting him physically prepared, it's about getting him mentally prepared. So, him actually rebuilding his muscle mass, or building muscle mass for the first time, is just about sticking a whole bunch of the little shocky belts that work your ab muscles to him. Hey, Andy's waking up, and it's a new scene. There's almost a drinking game in that. And obviously, we're meant to assume it's been a while. Because, you know, he has eyebrows again. And anyone who's played with fire knows those take a while to grow back. No. See, that's really only a mildly interesting thing. I think the what is still a more relevant question. See, and then he immediately explains where he is. Hovercraft, named after a biblical king. get the start of the really big undercurrent of all this. Because a lot of sort of the robot apocalypse fiction, which would encompass certainly this, but also say Blade Runner or Terminator, is fundamentally afraid of technology. It's got a Frankenstein, don't play God mode to it. And here, they aren't necessarily afraid of technology. In fact, they treat the mind like a computer throughout the whole thing. You don't have a program that loads. You just have loading for programs. But what we really need is some beat-up wing-back chairs. You know, that's an interesting idea, and there was supposed to be more of that in the movie. But I find it strange that it comes across so accurately, that really, people tend to think of themselves as, you know, perhaps a little taller, a little fatter. You know, your own self-image is kind of your worst enemy. Oh, hey. What do you think? True? CRT monitor? Something true gonna happen on it? Yeah, probably. You blew it up. You blew it all up. Damn you all to hell. It looks remarkably like a movie set. I'm betting it was us. We're jerks like that. See, if we're willing to burn the sky, we're willing to shoot a few robots first. So, most people who know a bit about science, have criticized the movie for saying that no machine would use the human body to generate electricity. Because it's horribly, horribly inefficient. And that's actually true. The original draft called for the Matrix to be something to keep the conscious mind occupied, as the subconscious was used as RAM for the more complex operations of a fully robotic society. You know, basically, someone turned on the Overlord, and now they have to spend the rest of their lives calculating pi, to borrow a joke from Mass Effect. And really, that's kind of gets re-emphasized a lot as they just treat the brain as a computer. Sorry, that's my phone. But they treat the brain like a computer the whole time. And calling back to the copper top remark from earlier. There we go. Full circle. And there we have one more refusal of the call. See, I'm not totally sure you'd vomit after, you know, an existential crisis. I mean, I guess that was the point of the story, nausea. But really, he probably hasn't even eaten anything. What did he vomit? Because you're special. Because you're the hero. I'm just the mentor. Other people are there to be your helpers. And he didn't fix anything for us, so... You're a wizard, Harry. We got the Rocky music queued up and everything. He says that like he's proud, and that'll be the last time anyone's proud of being organic. Helper number one on the hero's journey, I suppose. Unless Trinity counts as helper one. She doesn't help much, but thus far. Plus we're like 40 minutes in and we haven't had an action sequence since the opening, so let's do this. And of course, in order to receive, you know, martial arts training in an instant, the brain has to be computer. It's like, you know, installing software drivers, not like actual effort. See? He just got praised for being a machine. No real fear of technology. Just equating the mind with the machine. And you'll even see the body equated with the machine. And this is where everyone seems to think this is where the Eastern concept comes in. it's not about it, but the whole thing is not about achieving Zen enlightenment. Neo's journey is about realizing that Descartes was right, that the mind is greater than the body, and that the physical realm has cheat codes, and that by understanding this, you can activate the cheat codes. That is a really derpy look on his face, man. I would want to punch that. That's why Lawrence Fishburne is so good in this scene. Again, he doesn't get... He doesn't praise the technique either. He praises the aptitude. And see, we've even dropped the Eastern drum music for, you know, techno. To further emphasize the point that this movie released in Asian, I'm sorry, critics of the late 90s. I don't think that's really tactically viable, considering how he's responding. Lol, noob. Yes, it is in fact air he's breathing now. I'm sure he smells some imaginary incense, but as some rules come forward later, yes, he's breathing air right now. See, again, the information that portrays falsehood on LCDs. Yes, Jesus Christ was fast. Do or do not, there is no try. Okay, maybe I went a little early on the Yoda quote, but there we go. Oh, I guess that's the other one. Of course, that, to quote Lao Tzu, you know, what I'm saying is just the finger pointing at the moon. It's the moon that matters, not the finger. Oh, and back to the leap of faith scenario. Because again, the mind is distinct from the body, and is in fact limited by the body. Reeves gets a lot of flack for this role, but really, the character's just written as kind of a dunce. I mean, when you give a man a dialogue like, I know Kung Fu, and whoa, he's gonna do it. I'm sure there's a cut of this with Looney Tunes music. And here's the really big rule, I guess they introduce. And again, reasserting the primacy of the mind. How very 18th century France. Yes, it can. It needs a lot of support, and there's a great deal of debate as to the moral standing of, allowing such individuals to die without prior consent in the form of a living will. And continues to haunt the Supreme Court to this day. But yes, the body can live without the mind. And getting back to the maiden mother crone scenario, very much the mother role at this point. Another transition with a representation of a person. Getting a little less literal in this case, but hey. Come on, everyone's looking at the woman in the red dress. And I guess rule number two for the movie. So we're at an hour into the movie, and we're just about out of exposition. A little more. A couple more pieces. See, this Doors and Key talk could have come up in a sequel, but it might have been unsatisfying, so I'm glad they didn't make any. Three? But there are some men who would be really annoyed and insist you call them magazines. And I guess that's the special destiny. Free the minds of everyone and not need to dodge bullets. Killing? Like, when you define something as a killing machine, you don't really need to establish that it's designed for one thing, or what that one thing is. And here's where the CG falls apart, because I've got, CD-ROM adventure games that have better better environments than this. Actually, this might just be a recycle from Sewer Shark. They established that he's a computer programmer fairly early on. And you're telling me he needs to be explained what an EMP is? I mean, this guy would have had to have taken math and science for about 16 years of school. The term would have come up. This is the one section that's kind of like a submarine movie. We gotta play all the tropes. Run silent, run deep. I'm not saying it's not justified with the sonar dish looking thing, but I'm just saying. You gotta have the one submarine movie moment. Play it all. So getting back to residual self-image, the original intent for the character of Switch was that she would have appeared as a woman in the Matrix and a man in real life, the idea being that she identified so strongly as a woman that that the Matrix made it so. This was cut just for time. And I think you could have put this characteristic onto Cypher here and had that play into his motivation for wanting to be plugged back in, and have it play a lot more strongly, or stronger, than his actual motivation of, hey, he's just kind of a hedonist who's a bit jilted. He's the sheep, like he's the willingly ignorant, and you know that works to a certain extent. But I think it adds a little more punch if it's like, no, he doesn't even feel good in his own skin. What do they even make the alcohol out of? They don't have sunlight to go green. Again, that name. Why do you keep calling him that? Well, you refuse the call a couple times. That's what you do when that's what you say. He mentioned a little minute ago while I was talking was that the code, you know, he just sees the code as people, which is obviously a foreshadowing. Yes, Mr. Descartes, the demon is tricking you. Double negatives. Yeah, guy named Reagan acting. Never heard of it. But there we go. He understands the situation, that his mind is just a machine that can be adjusted. He wants to be back in. Another thing that dates this movie, you can't smoke in restaurants anymore, right? So I've obviously referenced Descartes a few times. And this is the scene that really drives it home, is that in his Meditations on First Philosophy, René Descartes came to the conclusion that he could not truly trust his own perceptions, that everything he tasted and saw could just be a trick of the mind, a dream, or the work of a demon. And Mauss here illuminates this in a discussion of chicken and. And that's basically how everyone, would talk to Descartes about it. See, and again, treating the body like a machine, because obviously it has all of the nutrients a body needs, but we just cut from a scene where a guy was enjoying a steak, which is not a balanced meal, but steak is tasty. That's actually a really good point. I won't argue with him on that. But I'm not going to buy any death sticks off him. Pardon me while I air drum. See, analog phone lines, they're safe. See, even now, Switch is hella androgynous, and that has to be the least flattering thing Carrie-Anne Moss has ever worn. That's about as much as I'll say about fashion in this, except to point out that this movie actually did change fashion. Hey, and digital technology, not to be trusted. No, you didn't. Or so you thought. Because she's a supernatural helper, as opposed to your mundane environment. Hero. Not to tell you. I really would not trust this elevator. I'd look at it and I'd just take the stairs. Because she likes to talk like a fortune cookie. Again, finger at the moon. Why does someone who needs the future need a secretary? Night of the Lepus on the TV. Great, terrible movie. And look, it's Aang! Aang, who is here to remind us that the key to winning this is cheat codes. But he sounds very zen about it. Actually, it's rather a Hindu notion, more so than Zen. And I am here, and we are here, and we are all together. Yeah, because we figured, you know, why expect a second magical Negro stereotype? And I guess a last bit of Buddhist. There's an old Buddhist riddle story. Thing that goes that you have to drink like the cup is already broken to truly enjoy it. It's not a big part of this movie, but I figured I'd bring it up. Because there's so many women in your life, Neo. Because Enlightenment era philosophers love Latin sayings appropriated from the Greek. You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah. Well, no. What he's waiting for is for him to finish the hero's journey, which in this case culminates in self-determination and choosing to be the one. Because thus far, he has not really chosen to do anything of his own will. Also, he's John the Baptist. It kind of had to happen. And hey, another binary decision point for Mr. Anderson. Except, again, not totally a real choice. Because, yeah, that's the whole point of being the Messiah. Fate is for apostles. Oh, see, mobile phone. Bad things happen with mobile phones. And I think we're about at the point where, you know, the interesting things to say, at least for the characters, have been said. And now, we can get to the shooty bits. See, the line you trust, the landline has been cut. Can I just say these are like the coolest looking guns in the movie, and they just, you know, that they really only get the two shots. It's okay. After the Death Sticks bit, he rethought his life and did something better with it. Google quickly, tank. Ain't that a kicker? Dude, if you're hanging on to the water mains, that's gonna rattle like crazy. I'm surprised they made it that far. I almost kind of wish that shot had made it seem like he was deliberately making noise, rather than trying not to. I guess. And I guess this would be this descent to the cave in the hero's journey, either here. Or maybe a little later down the line. Some descending going on. Why would the agents have names? I mean, really. Why isn't he like Alpha or something? Something. It's a little weird. Especially considering they do try so hard to make the agents seem kind of faceless throughout the whole thing. This guy gets to have a face for some reason. So. They're not really opposing the system anymore. They're opposing this guy who, I guess, is the avatar of the system. Can't we all just get along? now the landlines have turned against us. See, I hate this gun. You go to the effort of coming up with a cool, science fiction-y thing, and then you just give it a firework noise. And the sound design on this has been solid so far. And he takes the time to gloat. And really, that's where he falls apart, is the gloating. Everyone falls apart on gloating. There's only, like, two women in your life right now. Why couldn't you? Why not, huh? And again, the spirit of the Enlightenment was very anti-hedonistic, I think. Plato would have been all right with enjoying yourself, more so than Descartes and the Wachowskis are. I don't get why this kills people. They had so many lines and character development. The only reason the cast was this big at all was to kill people off in this scene. Again, I guess here we go is, you know, the Judas Iscariot comparison, because he didn't want the kingdom of heaven, he wanted a kingdom on earth. See, that's comforting, that's deterministic. I like that. There's a lot of people saying, I don't believe it, and then saying, well, you have to believe it. And now it's like, no, you don't have to believe it. I'm still going to kill you. Don't mind me. I'm just horribly burned. Yeah, that's rough. No, you won't. You'll die. Complications. Infected. That's already infected. You live on a rust pit. You're a dead man. Another reflection. More windows. Hey, how is it that they're holding you? Your mind's so free, Morpheus. Why don't you just break it with your super strength? That's a very Buddhist thought. That's not really evolution, then. I mean, that's a catastrophic extinction event and a rise of a new dominant life form. So the dinosaur analogy works, it's just not the evolution part. I mean, barring meteors, there'd still be dinosaurs. Again, hey, mind, it's a computer. See, a choice that is a non-choice. So, again, another statement of disbelief. See, he doesn't say he chooses to, he says he has to. So, he didn't make a choice. Why would he speak Spanish? Well, at least you believe in something. I mean, most of this movie, you've not believed anything. So that's a step. And we're hitting the end of the movie, so that's a good sign. So, getting back to Harlan Ellison, in the story, I have no mouth and I must scream. The villain is a computer that hates humanity with all his being, for what humanity is. Well, no, that's not exactly true. See, that's a bit of a false dichotomy. I'm not a biology person, but I know that that's not really the case. But also parasites and vermin. Exactly. It's like rats, which are also mammals. I mean, it doesn't fit for, say, deer, but, you know, that's not the best logic there, kid. Again, see, he's a person. He's not the system. The other two guys, they're the system, but Smith, he's already showing a personality now. It's too bad they didn't explore that in those sequels they never made. And there we are, back to Harlan Ellison. I timed that reference wrong. See, again, he doubts smell. It's a very sentient thing to do. He's already hit Descartes level. You know, Fishburne should have had a pithy remark in that scene. It feels like a pithy remark kind of moment. But there we go, really. That's the last thinking anyone has to do in this movie, and now let's just explode some stuff. Why would... See, this is unnecessarily theatrical. Like, why wouldn't you just start by shooting these guys? Why do the metal detector thing? Why do the talk? You're just giving them time to call backup. You could have opened this whole thing with C4, man. Showmanship. I guess I don't respect showmanship. Yeah, I'm guessing firearms training was one of the ones they skipped, considering how badly he did and had to switch to fully autos again. There's no way that's the right caliber for that gun. I disbelieve. I mean, this is just a good-looking shot. There's something to be said for slow-mo. It gets abused, but sometimes it's just cool. I got nothing to add. And that was actually just something left over. They didn't script that. That was just on one of the reels and they kept it. Again, kind of a weird way to go about it. Why not just leave the bomb on the first floor and remote detonate it? I mean, I guess you need the rapid ascension factor, but there we go. Again, more of the falling water imagery. I'm not sure what that means. If that's a symbol I'm not catching, hit me in the comments. Notice that they really only seem to possess, like, the police officers, you know, SWAT guys, one garbage man, people who are already sort of civil servants. It's like they aren't possessing grannies. The man. And so this movie won an Oscar for Best Visual Effects for this. And it's really just a camera trick. Or I guess maybe more appropriately like a, you know, 60 camera trick. It's one movie camera and a bunch of stills set up in a circle in a green environment. Because really, even though at the time it was getting kind of flogged in music videos and comedy sketches and would really get beat to hell over the next couple of years in movies, no one on the Academy wanted to say, yeah, we gave the award for best visual effects to Jar Jar Binks, no matter how good a CG character integration into live action that may have been for the time. But again, no real fear of the technology, because she compliments him as saying, well, you move like one of them. You know, you are more like a machine, and thus better. And again, reinforcing that the brain, just a machine that can be programmed. She's got some USB drivers up and can now handle a helicopter. He just says no. It's not that he doesn't believe it, he just doesn't like it. Slow motion. It's kind of pretty. The way you get the little water jets popping up is to actually have basically air packs, little canisters of compressed air that you set off in time. That's why they go straight up. I forget where I learned that. This is probably a baptism thing. That one's probably baptism. With Morpheus, I mean. Because there you see, you know, he gets up and walks and towards his Messiah and has the power to do whatever. And now it's Morpheus' turn to fall. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did they actually shoot this in L.A.? Seems like it. I mean, I'm not sort of noticing any obvious Vancouver-ness to this city space. So that was probably a little more expensive. See, if you've got such spent so much time accurately replicating physics, why would that in particular break the system? Like, I'm sure cars and planes crash into things all the time. Why is it that that's the one helicopter that makes it go all wobbly? And that what you needed to hear is that you're the one when you want to be, and not when I say so. They've avoided using that effect all movie because it looks kind of cheesy. Maybe this is the descent to the cave. I mean, there's definitely cave-like elements to it. Hero with a thousand faces is kind of malleable. They both could be. I'll just pick up the phone. And okay, there goes that theory of mine. I guess he does possess a homeless guy. He's outside the system pretty far. And here we are, and I guess the first real choice. He could run. Obvious choice point to not. But here we go. The Sergio Leone moment instead. I'd call it the John Woo moment, but there were no doves. See, now, the real reason Hugo Weaving is winning this fight has nothing to do with Nia's, you know, self-determination. It's the fact that he's, you know, hitting with full extension, pushing through the target rather than hitting the target itself. You'll see that here. Like, he's going all the way through Keanu Reeves, and Keanu Reeves is just confident with hitting him. It's a very important distinction. It's how pretty much anyone can break a board if they really try. Yes, he is killing Jesus. And I'm sure mopping up the blood will help. He does know Kung Fu. See, just kicking the chest, not all the way through. I mean, that's got some real impact to it. But of course, he doesn't believe in fate. And here we have self-declaration. And that's why you stay behind the yellow line. And just to ratchet up that tension a little higher. Again, that's a nice callback to the woman in red scene, because hey. But with more violence against watermelons, I guess. Melons do explode better than other fruit. And so we're coming up on the end of the movie, and thus the end of the hero's journey, which, if you aren't following along with your copy of Joseph Campbell, is death. Why only five? Wouldn't you send, like, a lot? Wouldn't you have a backup squad? I don't know. I'm not a robot. And hey, here we are back at the beginning. Of course, aim is relative in movies. He's only a machine designed to kill people. Why would he need, you know, perfect understanding of Newtonian physics related to bullets? And two, at least 10 bullets. I'm calling the count 10. That's pretty thorough. Again, more disbelief. But don't worry, the data's on an LCD. It's malleable. Props to the sound design again for keeping that phone sound running all through the back of this. But of course, the one has to die and come back with all the knowledge. And I guess this is her transitioning from mother to maiden. Normally it goes the other way, but it's a little Oedipal, kind of Freudian. I think it works. And getting back to the seeing code as people, here we see Mr. Anderson seeing people as code. Nice little circles, all coming back together. And, I mean, she even said a new lifetime. I mean, dead on the table's gotta count for something. And coming back full circle to something I said, finally, full extension. Cheat code's nothing. It's just good technique. So the destiny of mankind is not to overcome the machines, but to fully integrate the machines into his own self and identity. So I guess keep buying iPods or something. And don't be too afraid of your Roombas. Don't spoil this moment with words. Please don't. I honestly forget if this movie spoils that moment with words. They don't. And so, hero's journey complete. Prophecies fulfilled. All of conclusions really foregone at this point. So no point in making two more movies in this setting. None at all. And that's why it didn't happen. And nay, even him offering a choice to someone else. Not necessarily a binary, which would have really tied it all together, but there you go. That's the other thing. I should have mentioned sunglasses. There's always that layer between perception and not. And the real honesty comes when the sunglasses are off. You saw that with Smith, you see that. Not really with Morpheus, but always Neo. And just in case you forgot, this movie came out in, the late 90s. There's some new metal to close us out on. That's the end of it, and it's late. But, well, the credits are rolling, I guess I'll mention. Where did Backseat Quickies go? Asked no one in particular. But, honestly, some real life happened. That was pretty much it. It also started to get like a chore. Like, a lot of it was just me talking to myself about what I thought about movies. And it got to be hard to find something, a new movie every week I actually wanted to see. It's not gone. I'm gonna do a few more things with it, a couple rants, and then it'll really end with my review of Thor 2. I figure going out on that bookend is nice, but after that it's gonna go on a much longer hiatus. I might try some other projects. If you want to hear me do another quasi-commentary like this, I will totally be up for that. I think I've got something in me for Ghost in the Shell. We'll see. But until then, that's all I've got to say. You can just enjoy these credits and this wonderful music. Later.